Well, we are, of course, in Sermon on the Mount. We talked about murder in the heart a couple of weeks ago in chapter 5, verses 21 through 26, and how it's not just physically killing someone that God says is a sin. It's also having that attitude in your heart that you wish they were dead and you want them to be dead. The Bible says that is a sin. And that's why he sometimes calls this, or it's been called, murder in the heart. Because that's where murder begins. That's where it begins. You know, you've got that disposition, that hatred inside, and then it expresses itself by killing someone. And of course, murder has, there's just so many murders in our country that it's phenomenal. You know, St. Louis now is one of the highest per capita murder cities in the country. And, you know, that's just a few hours away.
Chicago was not far behind.
Well, yeah, them in Chicago. Yeah, right there in the Midwest. You know, you think about the coast being the only places. Right here in the Midwest. This is really awful. Well, those murders begin in the heart. It might be greed. It might be jealousy. It could be all kinds of reasons that people murder. But he says it starts in the heart. That's why he says, if there is something between you and someone else, and it's something that you can do something about, all right? Obviously, if someone is not present or they've passed away or whatever, that's not possible. But if it's possible, he says, try and be reconciled. That doesn't mean it'll always work, because it doesn't, but it's the effort that he wants to see. It's the effort. So then he says the same thing is about adultery. You know, he just talked about murder in the heart, where he says the same thing about adultery. He says that's where it starts as well. Verse 27. You've heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not commit adultery. And of course, that's mentioned many, many times in the Old Testament. He says, but I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. For it's more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and cast it from you. For it's more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. So he says that you have heard that it was said to those of old. And remember, one of the things he is stressing in this sermon is that quite often the Pharisees abused or misapplied Old Testament scriptures. And they would often ignore parts or emphasize other parts in ways that God never intended. And he mentions that several times in this sermon, how they have misapplied, misused, misinterpreted Old Testament scriptures. And he said, you know, and you've been told and you've heard that you shall not commit adultery. And of course, that was a sin punishable by death in the Old Testament during the time of the law of Moses. It was punishable by death. Rape was punishable in the same way as far as the man. I believe the man was, if I remember right, the man, it was a capital punishment for the man if he raped someone. I believe that's right. I'd have to check on that. But murder, you know, if you committed murder, it was a capital punishment. You were executed. You were killed. There wasn't any question about it. So it was very, very serious stuff. Well, adultery, if you committed adultery, capital punishment, and you were killed, executed, all right, by what would be considered the government. But he says here, it's not just the physical act of adultery. He says, also, God never wanted you even to lust for someone. And this word lust has the idea of set one's heart upon a thing, lust after, long for, covet, desire to do. The idea is that this is something that is ongoing. It's not just something you looked at and then was gone. This is something that was ongoing. You were lusting for whoever this person was. And he says, you have, because adultery starts in the heart, you've committed adultery with her in his heart. Now, that's not physical adultery because that, you know, that's not possible. But it is sinful. That's what he's saying. Just like hating someone is sinful, well, lusting after someone, he says, is also sinful. So having that same bad heart, okay? Remember he talked, you know, it started with the Beatitudes about being pure in heart and, you know, seeing God and showing mercy. All these Beatitudes is where it started. So if you exhibit the Beatitudes, then you're not going to be committing murder in your heart or adultery in your heart or any of these other things. I think that's why he started with the Beatitudes, because that's the foundation. You know, being pure in heart and all these others. So he says that's what you have to look out for, because it's going to start on the inside. So you stop it before it gets to the physical act. Whether it was murder or adultery or whatever. It's about self-control. Remember, that's one of the fruit of the Spirit is self-control. Christians should have more self-control than any other group of people. We should be people who have control. That doesn't mean we don't fail occasionally. Yeah, we obviously do. But this is something that is ongoing that he's talking about here. It's not just something that was occasionally done. This was something that was purposefully done, ongoing, regular, something that is, you know, someone that you are lusting after, that you want, basically more than anything. And the Bible talks about, you know, Proverbs talks about it, about lusting. The New Testament talks about it. There were laws in the Old Testament about it, as far as you know what you. The Old Testament wasn't just about outward acts. There were other things as well that they needed to be aware of, but many of them weren't. So sins of the heart were condemned in the Old Testament, but not probably to the extent that we see them in the New. Would someone read 2 Peter 14? This goes right along with what we're talking about. And then we'll go to Colossians 3:5. But first of all, 2 Peter 2:14.
Having eyes full of adultery that never cease from sin, enticing unstable souls, having a heart trained in greed, accursed children.
Okay. Eyes full of adultery cannot cease from sin. See, these are, again, this is a mindset. It's a whole attitude. This is something you're lusting for continually. Then what about Colossians 3:5? Colossians 3:5. The little tabs or whatever.
Therefore, consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immortality, impurity, passion, evil, desire and greed, which amounts to adultery.
Okay, he talks there about uncleanness and fornication and passion and evil desire or lust. He talks about those. He says, you're to put to death your members. Put to death your members. Well, he's not talking literally about plucking your eye out or cutting your arm off, because cutting your arm off or cutting your hand off is not going to get rid of the problem. The problem's inside. The problem's inside. So plucking out your eye is not going to get rid of the problem. You still have lust or hatred on the inside. And the same way with, you know, you're cutting off your hand. That's not going to keep you from stealing, because it's on the inside. Stealing's on the inside. So he says, and all of that's about being in control, exercising self-control. That's what he wants us to do. So when he tells us to put to death our members which are on earth, that's what he wants us to do. Practice self-control. Not be perfect. Not never cross the line, because he knows we will. But he says the more self-control you exercise, then the fewer times you're going to slip up. So he says, watch what your heart is desiring. Watch what your mind is thinking about. In other words, guard your mind. Out of it are the issues of life, the wise man Solomon said. So whether it's murder, whether it's adultery or whatever, he says, if you keep your heart, if you keep your mind and you guard it and you watch it and you control it, then the times that you do slip will be much, much less less often. So he says that's what you have to be aware of. Well, he goes on and really kind of ties it all together when he says in verse 31, furthermore, it has been said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery. So again, he starts out by saying, it has been said, or you have heard that it was said. So the same type of thing he's mentioning again. So let's read some of those places in the Old Testament that talk about that. So let's go to Deuteronomy 24. Okay, Deuteronomy 24. I believe it starts with verse 1, but let's see. Yes, would someone read? It's kind of a long read, but it's important, I think. Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 4. Deuteronomy 24, 1 through 4. Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 4.
Okay. If a man marries a woman who becomes displeasing to him because he finds something indecent about her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, gives it to her, and sends her from his house, and if after she leaves his house, she becomes the wife of another man, and her second husband dislikes her and writes her a certificate of divorce, gives it to her and sends her from his house. Or if he dies, then her first husband, who divorced her, is not allowed to marry her again after she has been defiled. That would be detestable in the eyes of the Lord. Do not bring sin upon the land the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance.
Okay, that's the main Old Testament text that talks about a certificate of divorce. It's hardly ever found anywhere else. So this is the main text. And in it, we find out that this man, the husband, can give her a certificate of divorce if he finds some uncleanness in her, or the Hebrew word is basically uncleanness, which is a pretty broad term. And if he finds something, you know, causes him to lose favor with her, then he writes her a certificate of divorce, gives it to her, and then she leaves. So there were occasions where that could be done. So they could, the woman could be given the certificate of divorce and sent on her way, I guess it'd be what you would want to call it. So in our text, when he says, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce, there is this putting away. All right, that's what he's basically doing. He's putting her out of the house, putting her away from the marriage, putting her away from the house, putting her away from the marriage covenant, whatever we might want to call it, all of those things. So that's what he was doing. So if he puts her away, if he sets her free in that sense, then he had to give her this certificate of divorce. And it was basically something so that she could take with her, showing what had happened. But notice, she could marry somebody again. She can't go back to her first husband ever under any circumstances. But she could marry someone else. Now, in our text, it says, notice, it has been said, and then Jesus says, but I say to you. So this comes directly from Christ himself. And first of all, even in the Old Testament, divorce was serious. I mean, divorce was a serious, serious thing. And no one was to get married unless they were serious about it. Because it was a covenant. It was an oath. It was an agreement. And they were to take it serious. It wasn't something like today where it just doesn't mean much of anything to anybody. I'm amazed at how many of my students that I've had in the past few years have already married and divorced. And then they've just been out of school a few years. They've already married, and now they've already divorced, and it didn't take, you know, 3 or 4 years. And they're already divorced. So it is extremely common. And especially with this last generation, I guess we want to call it. So they don't take it very seriously. But God has always taken it seriously. Going back to, you know, Genesis chapter 3. He's always taken marriage seriously. And regardless of the time, the dispensation, the circumstances, he's always taken it seriously. Whether people took it seriously or not. He always has. So he says, whoever divorces his wife, now notice he gives an exception, for any reason except sexual immorality, causes her to commit adultery, because she's been, again, put away for a reason other than sexual immorality. And he says, whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery. So if she'd been put away for committing fornication or sexual immorality, someone marries her, not only is she committing adultery, but so is the person who marries her. Even though he didn't have anything to do with it, Jesus said he is still committing adultery because she can't get married. That's what he says. She can't marry someone because she broke the covenant. She is the one, again, we're assuming sexual, or she committed some type of sexual immorality, then that's why he put her away. And he has the right to do that if it's for sexual immorality. He has the right to do it. And he's not sinning when he does that, if it's for sexual immorality. But if it's for any other reason, you know, he got tired of her, or whatever, then that's not a reason. So Jesus is restricting in that sense the certificate of divorce. That certificate of divorce can't just be for something that he finds unseemly or unclean. It has to be for sexual immorality. He says that's the only reason. Otherwise, sin is involved. So if he puts her away for something other than sexual immorality, then he is going to be committing sin. And it is something that's, if you look at verbs, it's a present tense verb, meaning that he continues to commit it. It's not a one-time deal. It's something he continues to do. So if he puts her away, Jesus says, except for sexual immorality, for any other reason, then he'll commit adultery. And again, it's ongoing, not a one-time act, but something that continues to be sinful.
I think today, a good basis for the divorce is the man or the woman won't relinquish the remote control.
Yeah, people will get divorced for any reason. Of course, with no fault divorce, you know, you don't even have to have a reason. It can just be, we're tired of each other and that's it. We're done with it, you know. So that's that's what Jesus is warning about, because people weren't taking it seriously. It wasn't a big deal, but Jesus says it's a big deal. It's important. The marriage covenant, the marriage contract, the marriage relationship is a very, very big deal. And he says, don't treat it mildly. So only in the case where there's fornication committed, sexual immorality, he says that's the only thing that breaks that covenant, where the innocent party doesn't sin anymore, or can't, or won't sin. But other than that, he says that's the only reason. Of course, this is repeated in Matthew 19, 1 through 9 as well. But so Jesus talks about it here in the Sermon on the Mount, and then much later in Matthew 19, which takes place quite a bit later than Matthew 5, he repeats it and says pretty much the same thing. We can go there and read a few of those verses. I think we've got 5 or 10 minutes. So, when we look at Matthew 19, it says, verse 3, the Pharisees also came to him, testing him and saying to him, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason? See, there's what he was addressing in the Sermon on the Mount. Can you divorce for just any reason at all? And see, in the first century, some of the Jewish rabbis were teaching that you could divorce for any reason whatsoever. You didn't like the way she cooked. You didn't like the way she looked in the morning. You could divorce her and that was fine. So Jesus is, that's what these Pharisees are asking him. Is it lawful to divorce for any reason whatsoever? Well, Jesus comes back and said, have you not read? See, he goes right back to the Bible. Have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become flesh. So then they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate. Again, that shows how serious Jesus takes it. He says this goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden. Well, they weren't through with him. So they said, why then did Moses command to give a certificate of divorce and to put her away? Now notice, that's what the Pharisees were saying. That's not what God had said. That's what the Pharisees were saying. So Jesus comes back in the next verse and says, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. He says, that's what Moses allowed you to do because of your sinful, hardened, rebellious heart. You know, what we read there in Deuteronomy 24. But that's not what God wanted. He's never wanted that. Remember, Malachi, book of Malachi says God hates divorce. He doesn't want to see the marriage broken up. He knows sometimes it has to be. So he says, and I say to you, whoever divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, there's that same phrase, and marries another commits adultery, and whoever marries her or is divorced commits adultery. And his disciples said to him, if such is the case of the man with his wife, it's better not to marry. See, they were just stunned at Jesus' answer. They were stunned. They said, wow, if that's the only reason you can get divorced, should anybody get married at all? And then, of course, he comes back and answers that most people will get married. But some choose not to get married, and that's fine. But the point is, in verse 9, that he says the same thing he said in Matthew 5. The only reason to break the marriage bond is for sexual immorality. He says if it's for any other reason, then they commit adultery. They commit adultery. So he says it is, again, the whole idea is it's serious in God's eyes. It's a serious, serious thing not to be taken lightly, not to be just tossed around. But like I said, this is Jesus' first sermon. And he talks about marriage in the first sermon. How important it is for people to pay attention to marriage and the marriage bond. You know, we call it a marriage bond for a reason. Because, you know, you're supposed to be bound together. That's why you shouldn't marry unless you're positive this is the one. And I think that's a lot of the reason too. People get married and they do not have any idea what they're getting into. And they get into it and realize that this is not for me. And then they get a divorce. But God takes it seriously. Like I said, He thinks it's a very, very big deal. But again, it's all about, it starts in the heart. All of these things start on the inside. You know, things lead up when people get a divorce. It's not like their marriage is perfect for years and then one day it's suddenly not perfect. No, it starts on the inside. Starts on the inside. Then he goes to talking about oaths. Again, you've heard that it was said to those of old. Okay, there's the same phrase that he's been using over and over. You shall not swear falsely, but you shall perform your oaths to the Lord. He says, that's what you have been told. He says, but I say to you, do not swear at all. And again, this is all going to come from the inside. Neither by heaven, for it's God's throne, nor by the earth, for it's His footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it's the city of the great King. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your yes be yes and your no, no, for whatever is more than these is from the evil one. See, it's all about what's on the inside. Whenever we say, yes, I'm going to do this, then Jesus says, you had better mean it. If you say, yes, I'm going to do something, then yes, you had better do it. Or if you say, no, I'm not going to do it, then no, you had better not do it. You, a Christian, a disciple of Christ, shouldn't have to swear by the heavens or the earth or by anything else. You shouldn't have to swear because your word is rock solid. It is gold. So you shouldn't have to swear by anything for people to know what kind of person you are. Do you keep your promises? Do you do what you say you're going to do? Or do you just talk out of one side of your mouth and not mean it at all? Like the old saying, speaking with a forked tongue, you know, what they used to say. So what are you like on the inside? You know, are you honest? Are you trustworthy? Are you faithful? Do you do everything you can to keep your oaths? You know, we were talking about that on Sunday morning in class. So that's what he is warning about. He says, you should not have to swear by heaven or earth or by a city or by anything else, by your head, because people know that you're honest. People know that you're trustworthy. They can count on you. Yes, I'm going to be there by 10 o'clock. Then they know that you're going to do everything in your power to be there by 10 o'clock. And they know if you're not there by 10 o'clock, something serious came up, or you would have been there. Jesus says that's the kind of people that you need to be. Faithful, trustworthy, honest, true to your word, keeping your promises. That's what you need to be like. You don't need to be, you know, wishy-washy and, well, if I don't get there at 10 o'clock, it's not a big deal. Yep, God thinks it's a big deal. Just like he thought hating someone was a big deal, or lusting after someone was a big deal, or committing fornication was a big deal. He thinks these things are big deals, even though people may not. He thinks they're important. Very important, actually. All right, well, our time is up, so we probably should stop there. Lord willing, we'll pick up with a going the second mile.